This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hello, this is producer Dez stepping out of the shadows to fill in for Luis Miguel Echegaray and the rest of the familiar faces of Che Golazo, who have all abandoned me and Heath Pierce for the Easter weekend and are presumably gorging on chocolate eggs. Well, the show must go on, and after a weekend full of twists, turns, and goalkeeping fumbles, we've got a lot to get through. Beginning, of course, with Real Madrid's second remontada of the week, Liverpool and Chelsea getting things done at Wembley, Manchester United reasserting themselves in the top four race, and PSG eking out a victory in Le Classique, and much more. The Che Golazo weekend recap begins right now. I've always wanted to say that. Yeah. Heath, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I like the hosting side of your game. You know, it's like the person who went to Hollywood because they wanted to make movies only to find out that they're the star in their films. You know, I like it. I'm doing well, though, man. It's been a great weekend. Unbelievable. Not, I know there's more games today, but unbelievable end to what I feel was the largest game of a match of the day with Sevilla and Real Madrid. I mean, there was the Crystal Palace Chelsea, but that didn't end as excitingly as that one did. So I'm excited to talk about all things football.
For sure. Without further ado, anyway, anyone listening in on podcast form, please, as always, we have to throw out the calls to action. Make sure you're following. Leave us a glowing rating review. Anyway, on with the show. Real Madrid, Sevilla. Another remontada, 3-2.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, it was a tale of two halves. It truly was. And I know that we say that seemingly a lot now about this Real Madrid side, and we've been highly critical of them throughout the season, just in terms of, like, after this season, how do they rebuild? If Kylian Mbappe went there, what would be, you know, wouldn't just be a signing. You need multiple signings. But somehow they continue to find a way to motivate themselves. And The moment that I go to, at least in this game with regard to the remontada, the comeback, was that the third goal happened from Benzema checking back to the midfield, where you could just see, and you very rarely see this because it's such a large field and a large sport. You see this a lot in basketball, right? Where you just see the eyes of a guy who's about ready to take over a game. And it's just sort of going like, there's something here for me. I need to go and find that. And I was watching him, his movements more often than not today, just because of the fact of what he's done recently, right? And he's done it for his entire career, but recently just has this attention of, like, his movement. And the commentators were talking a lot about his movement and things like that. So I started watching him and whatnot. But when it came down to that third goal, you know, for anybody that didn't know, Sevilla up 2-0 on a couple of mistakes. Real Madrid get one back. And then all of a sudden it starts a little bit of this momentum of, like, can Sevilla hold off at home in front of this incredible atmosphere and their fans? Can they hold off for the rest of the game? And then, as I was getting to, Benzema checks back, he gets the ball, lays it off, and you can just see that he's just kind of looking for the ball over and over and over again. They go down to the touchline, they cut it back to him, and he's able to put it away. And it was one of those things where it was just, when you see a striker check back as far as he did to get the ball, usually you're like, dude, get back up by the goal, we're down a goal, we need more, we can't just, because it's hard to take over games in football, right? Because you check back and now you've got seven players you've got to get past by yourself. And so that series of events leads to 3, 4, 5 passes to the cutback to him that he's able to take with one touch, sets up with a second touch to keep the momentum going of the defenders going the other way and puts it away. It was just an incredible comeback and one where, you know, the halftime conversation was, is there a title race? Is this good for Sevilla? If Sevilla win this one, they've fallen from grace from the start of this year. They were kind of in a title race and they've fallen back, and then they would have jumped Barcelona had they won this one. Barcelona also wanted Sevilla to win it, thinking they could probably go head to head against Sevilla to finish second in the league or even challenge for a title. But now you've got this massive gap and it's pretty much over, at least in my book. Dez, I don't know your take on this, but this was literally the moment of the season for Sevilla. It was the moment of the season for Barcelona, and Real Madrid being able to pull off all 3 points after being down 2-0 away from home. I just don't see how they can come back in any way, shape, or form, because you're talking about 32 matches. That means, yeah, I know Barcelona has two games in hand, so that would put it at 9 points. Right? Wouldn't that be?
I think even coming into this game, the season's been wrapped up. It's just a question of when. Just the fact Sevilla, like, getting anything out of that is just trying to assure their position in the top four, because, you know, there's a few teams gunning to crack in there. I'm looking at Real Betis and Real Sociedad, who drew goose eggs or Easter eggs on Friday. And so that probably did Sevilla a favor. That was Sevilla's first defeat at home of the season. They were, up until that point, the only La Liga team unbeaten at home. Yeah. But it's just that Real Madrid team. Get that one goal back, there's just that sense of inevitability about what's going to happen.
Yeah, but I mean, even then, if you took it to, if they lost that, right, it would have been at 12 points. Barcelona's got two games in hand. That would take it to 6 points, which I still think is like, okay, with six games left to go, you got to win, what, four of those six? Like, come on. Like, I don't see Real Madrid not winning those against the with the schedule that they have. But it was still a conversation. And now this is completely dead because you took three away from Sevilla. You gave them to Real Madrid. They're now at the top. And games in hand, we've seen that. We saw it with Spurs, who did a little bit. We're seeing that now, where I think Arsenal's last game in hand is this upcoming game against who is it, against Chelsea or something like that, right?
Arsenal, yeah. Who are they playing next? Yeah,
I think it's Chelsea. Is their the last game in hand that they had coming up, and they haven't made the most of the gaps that they had. They started to, and then fell apart.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
The theme being that, like, games in hand don't always mean as much as people think they do. And they go, oh yeah, automatic 6 points because it's Barcelona. That's not always the case. We thought Barcelona should have been ironclad in the Europa League, and weren't able to do it. So overall, again, you go back to, like you said, Sevilla's first loss at home in the season. They looked incredible in the first half. And of course, it was a few mistakes off a free kick. The wall splits, ball goes through there. That happens. But they didn't look like they were really giving Real Madrid much of a sniff. They were looking off the pace a little bit. And to come back with three goals like that, incredible. And just pretty much, you know, stamps their trophy for this year in terms of the league title.
For sure. I mean, we've been speaking a lot about Real Madrid recently on the pod, of course, covering Champions League. How could you not? I just want to talk a little bit about Sevilla, though, and just how their season has kind of collapsed on them. Starting in January, there was only 5 points difference between them and Real Madrid. So they were definitely in contention. And, you know, looking at the calendar back then, you would have thought today was going to be, you know, almost decisive. But since then, they've just been drawing games. Like, today they didn't draw, but it's just been drawing games and an inability to score goals. Like, they don't really have, well, Rafa Mir is a target man, but not a prolific one. Anthony Martial is, you know, struggling to find his feet. He has been for quite a while. Manchester United fans will know all about that.
And there's no buy capability for him either in that one.
And to be honest, the impression I get reading Spanish coverage is that there's not really much of an urgency to get him. But just like, even in the sense of getting dropped out of Europa League, their competition, which is the final, is going to be hosted in the Sanchez Pizjuan, getting booted out of the Copa del Rey by their arch rivals, Real Betis. It all just feels a bit anticlimactic. You know, this is a team we admire. Like, they're run so well by Monchi. Julian Lopetegui is clearly a very astute tactician. But it just feels kind of disappointing. Like, this is how their season's going to peter out.
Yeah, I mean, it's hugely disappointing, which is why, you know, okay, move away from all that, and you start to, if you're within the club right now, you're like, we got to, like, Champions League, that's all that matters. At halftime of this match, you were teed up perfectly to do Champions League, 3 points out of this, finish the season on a strong. Yeah, you were booted out of these other competitions. You've been really good at home for most of the year, and this really almost feels like the indicator of the form that they've been in, right? You're able to sort of, had they won this game, you could sort of look at it and go, yeah, maybe we fell short here of a few of our goals, but we're still on path. Now they've got a really rough rest of the season in terms of the points. Not that 3 points would have swung them either way, but it would have at least kicked them into some momentum against the league leaders that they're not going to catch anyway. But at least there would have been some positive to come out of this. And this, I think, is a pretty big failure on the day, given the circumstances, especially. Like, had they lost in over 90 in the, you know, a normal game, okay, cool, whatever. Real Madrid's better than Sevilla. We can move on with that. But the fact that they were up 2-0 and to fall apart like that, I think is more like you were saying, indicative of some of the things that have gone wrong this season for them.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a huge morale blow for them. Just to wrap up quickly on La Liga, there were other games today. Atletico Madrid, we saw them in the league table there a moment ago, scraped a win in the 100th minute against Espanyol. Raul de Tomas went from hero to zero, scoring the equalizer with thanks to a terrible Jan Oblak fumble. I don't know if you saw that. And then he gave away a penalty deep into injury time, which Yannick Carrasco put away. LME witnessed Celta beating Athletic Club in San Mamés. I'm very jealous about that.
That's
quite
awesome.
An experience he had. Yeah, Iñaki Williams made it 6 straight years without missing a single game for his club, which is just remarkable.
I mean, elsewhere, when goalkeepers do that stuff, okay. But, like, otherwise, that's insane.
No, it's just phenomenal. Like, I don't think that can ever be repeated in top 5 league. It's just incredible. And then, yeah, Barcelona, we saw them in the league table playing Cadiz tomorrow. So, yeah, they're in with a shot of leapfrogging Sevilla after that. So, yeah, it's just a normal La Liga season. Normal business resumed. Real Madrid, Barcelona, top of the pile. Yeah, anyway, let's move.
I never thought that would happen, by the way, this season. But, you know, here we are.
Yeah, yeah. Goldman Sachs. Well done. Well played. Anyway, let's move on to FA Cup. There was a big game today, big game yesterday. We'll start, of course, with the most recent. Chelsea winning 2-0 over Crystal Palace. How did you see this one, Heath?
Yeah, I mean, I thought Palace again were good in the first half, and Thomas Tuchel came out in the second half approaching the game quite a bit differently, and it opened up Palace. And then as soon as they got one, I just didn't really see Palace really having a lot of options or opportunities in the way that they did in the first half. They didn't create opportunities in the first half, but they were in it. They were very much in this tie, and I know this one means a lot to them. But Chelsea, who continue to rotate their squad, trying to figure out who their best 11 is, were able to sort of, you just saw them wear them down over time. And when they got their goals, there was no coming back for Crystal Palace. I mean, I watched this one for the most part, kind of intently, some of it passively. And there was never really a moment where I was like, okay, you know, Chelsea look a little bit vulnerable and this could be Palace's. Although in the first half, you know, it had that makings of like neither team is really going for it, neither team is really exposed, which obviously plays towards Palace in the end because it takes a free kick or a set, you know, a corner kick or, you know, a set piece from somewhere or some sort of deflection can change the game of that. But a pretty solid game from Chelsea. And by the way, I don't remember what it was, but I think Chelsea have won their semifinal in the FA Cup. I don't remember what the statistic is. Like 10 times or something, or 8 out of 10 times or something crazy like that. I'll have to go back and look at it, but apparently they're pretty good in the FA Cup semifinal.
I mean, yeah, Thomas Tuchel has, you know, obviously the last few months have been quite challenging for them for numerous reasons, but when it comes to cup competitions, the man knows how to navigate them. One of the big talking points going into this game was the omission of Conor Gallagher. Chelsea loanee, who has been a revelation this year with Crystal Palace. They're a very good team, Crystal Palace, don't get me wrong. It's not a one player team, but you did notice his absence in midfield. What are your thoughts on this whole controversy, I'll say in air quotes, about the fear clause of not being allowed to play against his parent club?
I think it's stupid. I think if a player is surplus to requirements, whether it's from the player or from the club or all of the above, that player should be able to play. I mean, if it was me and I wasn't getting the minutes that I wanted, I went to another club, I would want to be on the field to prove to them that I should be a core part of that. And also the strides that Gallagher's made this year, you would want to put that on display. There's also the fact that they refused to have a purchase clause for him when he went on loan as well, where it's just like, it's kind of ridiculous. And I think they should do away with it. I think, in a weird way, I don't know why they do it. I don't know what the purpose. I mean, what is the reason?
I can see from the parent club's perspective, I can see why they would want to do it. Like,
yeah,
weaken the opposition any way you can, and you don't want your player to damage your chances.
Chelsea has 150 players out on loan. You know, like it just feels like a bit. I mean, I get it. Okay, if he had the match of his life, but. It's not like how many players have gone out on loan and been so good that they're better than all of the Chelsea team. You know, he could have a standout performance, but then at the end of the day, you get to go, hey, at the end of the season, look what we're going to get back, you know? And if anything, that's a compliment. I just feel like it's a little anticlimactic and a little sad that these clauses exist, because I would like to see how he compares, right? Out on loan.
For sure.
Like, see how he compares after a year like this of development playing for a club, and to be just randomly picked out of being like, oh, you can't play in this one. I think sucks, especially the magnitude of the game itself. I think one, it hurts Crystal Palace because he's been so good this year. And two, it just hurts the natural competition of the two teams putting their best team out to see who can win.
For sure. I think you can't really blame Chelsea for availing of this clause. If it's available, I can see why they do it. I guess this is on, you know, the FA, the Premier League to make amendments where that's concerned. I cast my mind back to Alvaro Morata, another Chelsea player, but this is when he was at Real Madrid and went on loan to Juventus and then scored the goals to eliminate Real from Champions League. So
yeah,
it can be damaging.
It can be damaging. I get that. But at the same time, like, that's a beautiful story. It's a beautiful story.
Yeah, and it's the parent club's fault for not wanting to keep them around.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I agree. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, just getting back to the game itself. So obviously his absence was felt. One player I was really looking out for was Wilfred Zaha. Obviously a core, instrumental, key figure for Palace. I felt he was kind of isolated today. Very hard to get the ball to him. Chelsea did a pretty good job of just kind of keeping him under wraps.
Yeah,
he saw that just from Chelsea's approach to keeping a leash on Palace's attack.
Yeah, he was the main threat, right? And I think they neutralized that as a threat, which played into their favor. I mean, again, like I said, the first half didn't really seem either way for either team. But he was eliminated from the start. Like in the first half, he was relatively quiet as well. He was completely quiet in the first half. So I think that played into Chelsea in terms of him being the threat that you needed to neutralize. And once they had him in that position where he wasn't really being effective, he's going to go looking for other ways to get involved. And obviously wasn't able to do that in time. But I think, yeah, it's a great shot. They you could tell that they were setting up their system to try to neutralize the threat that he can make to the team or against them. And they did a good job of that. So it's actually credit to the tactical system of Chelsea in that one.
No, for sure. So yeah, now it's we have the finalists. It's Chelsea, Liverpool, fourth time round.
Again.
Season. Again. The previous two previous three iterations all ended square. So how do you?
And one had some fun penalties, going? I guess. One had some fun.
I mean, it certainly did,
In a way. This is the unique thing, is like, this could be a salvageable moment for Chelsea standards, right? It's that time of the year where you start to look at any competition that you're in and go, this is a big enough trophy to call it a W this year. And then on the same side, Liverpool are still very much on for the quadruple. Obviously secured one. They've got three that they're still part of. So it's just going to be interesting to see who they roll out into this match, knowing that you're going to be playing against the Chelsea side that's going to roll out their 100% best team. When you go back to the League Cup, I remember watching it and thinking, like, this is a little bit of an odd sort of speed of the game, a little casual, a little relaxed, a little bit of like, don't get injured today. That led to 150 penalties in the end, which ended up putting you way more at risk when you play 120 minutes.
Yeah, everyone's cramping for the next month.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's a good match. I don't particularly enjoy watching Liverpool and Chelsea play each other, but a final is a final. So it'll be interesting to see how they actually come out. And for Chelsea specifically, this is their moment, right? This is their big moment for the season. They were in a title race earlier on in the year. You go all the way back to when Lukaku first arrived. I really loved everything that they're doing. I was like, oh, the puzzle is complete. There's no longer this missing piece. And that has not been the case for them this year. They've fallen a bit. So this could be a salvageable moment for them. And then also for Liverpool, just to see how they can, from a depth standpoint, how composed they can stay from now through the end of the regular season at the league level, now FA Cup, Champions League. It's going to be a big balancing act for them. And I don't know if they have enough depth to really rotate the squad. So yeah, we'll see what they put out.
Yeah. May is going to be a very intriguing month where it comes to Liverpool. Like you said, very unlikely that the league title will be decided before the penultimate, maybe the ultimate match day, and then Champions Crazy. League, you'd imagine they're going to be involved all the way through. We'll see. In other news, Chelsea, both the men and women's team reached the FA Cup finals. Chelsea women's team beating Arsenal 2-0, and they're going to be Man City in the final. That's on May 14th, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, that's my attempt of a seamless segue into talking about Manchester City and a certain Mr. Zach Stefan. The whole of Twitter had opinions about his blunder for Sadio Mane's first goal yesterday. I want to ask your opinions about this. Are we making a storm in a teacup? Is this as big a catastrophe as we're led to believe?
No. Yeah, I mean, yes, on some level. It's a huge catastrophe because the higher the level you go, the less room for error you get, right? Because the quality gets better around you, the less opportunities you get if you make those errors. You go back to the FA Cup last year when he made a mistake of sort of coming off his line, getting caught in between lines. And now, granted, they got in behind and kind of got stuck and maybe could have made the save if he had stayed kind of in front of the goal mouth. And he made that mistake and was criticized. But this one was an odd one just because of the fact that, like, he was so calm and casual that I don't know how he didn't see in his peripheral that somebody is coming at full speed. And then you add that kind of insult to injury or injury, whatever the phrase is, on the third goal that beats him to the near post. Fantastic strike and a quick release and, you know, well-placed near the post. But, you know, you start to look at that through different lens and go, man, should he have saved that? Should he be in better positioning? I mean, he's been beat at his near post on a little clip to the back post. He should have had time to get over further to cut that angle off. But the more alarming thing is the fact that you just quickly, I don't know why we think it's okay to have goalkeepers that don't play matches, but it's not okay to have field players that don't play matches. What's the difference? If anything, it's the most dangerous position to have somebody who's not firing on all cylinders. And that's not Zach Steffen's fault. And I do like the idea that this is where he gets his games, because you see that generally across the board. And some teams change it when they get to the semis and finals and whatnot. But the fact that he's not getting a good run of games, the fact that he's been in and out of injuries so far this year is a little bit alarming for U.S. men's national team fans and just Man City alike, right? You've got to look at that. And, you know, and Grealish said nice things about him after and saying, you know, we stand by him and all those kinds of things. But for him, take all of that away, he's still got to also process this and either leverage this to get better and learn from it, or this could haunt you. You know, these are the kinds of things, because it's FA Cup semifinal. Everybody's watching, you know, around the world. Everybody's going to remember this whole thing. You know what's going to happen next year on his first game, and then the next game and the next game that he plays? People are going to talk about it, whether in the broadcast or otherwise. Now, let's not forget what happened last year, you know, and this year they talked about what happened to him the year before. And you don't want to get the reputation of that. Not that reputations mean anything to a player on the field, but it is a little bit worrying, just the circumstances of him not getting a ton of time, his constant issues with you know, the muscle spasms and back issues that I think he's having, and kind of what that means going into the next 6 months before the World Cup.
Yeah, just I don't want to just dwell on this for too long, but you mentioned that you're worried about the lack of minutes for any of the goalkeepers, well, the current crop who have been called into the qualifying rosters. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, the one player the one goalkeeper a lot of people are talking about is Gabriel Slonina, another clean sheet in the weekend. He's
like
the only
five
one.
Five out of seven, right? It's like five clean sheets of seven so far this year.
So with that in mind, I know he's still very young and it's probably premature to talk about bringing him into the final roster for the World Cup, but June's right around the corner. Is does it make sense to finally give him a run of games? Or
I would use him. I would use him for games. I mean, you go back to like the early days when we had Bill Hamid, who was young. We had Sean Johnson, who was young in the national team. Brad Gazan was young in the national team. You know, you had a lot of these guys, and you know, you want to get them some games. And none of those guys were ever number ones until they. I mean, Gazan was for a good while, but that was post Tim Howard. But he spent a good amount of time being the second one in line to get games. That, you know, no one's looking at Gabriel Slonina going like, he's not like he's, you get five clean sheets for a reason. Now they can be circumstantial where you're playing against a team on their worst day and maybe you get one or two that way, or you're playing, you know, your back line is the best in the world. And I don't think that's the case at Chicago Fire. He's still having to make saves and do things that keep his team in game. So I think certainly get him a few looks or get him a few games, at least to just see how he responds. Right. Same thing with Matt Turner. Matt Turner, we didn't know what he was going to be. You know, you go back to Matt Turner's story, and he was like, he was training on the sidelines of the Revs games before he got his, like, everybody's waiting for their moment to prove themselves is, I guess, is what I'm getting to. So why not, if you're going to go and you're going to split time with goalkeepers, let him be one of the ones that gets a half, and you're going to have two goalkeepers likely not playing come summertime and into the fall. So if you have one that's at least playing, get him some minutes and some valuable experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I suppose we've covered enough ground on the FA Cup. We're going to take a short little break. On the other side, we'll talk about Premier League, a little bit on Le Classique, and who knows, maybe a little bit extra if you're lucky. All right. We'll be right back.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hey everyone, this is Jimmy Conrad, your favorite former U.S. men's national team player and the host of the Call It What You Want podcast. And I'm here to tell you that Vuori is a versatile clothing brand that speaks my language. It's inspired from the coastal California lifestyle, just like me. Its products stand the test of time, just like me. And also just like me, it endeavors to inspire others to live vibrant, healthy lives. Vuori gear is designed to look great in everyday life, while also being perfect for any workout activity. I'm currently rocking the men's Sunday performance jogger, and don't let the name deceive you. You can wear these babies any day of the week and in any situation. I'm talking going to the office, running errands, the gym, whatever your heart desires, because Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/sports. That's Vuori.com/sports. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Again, go to Vuori.com/sports and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
All right, welcome back in to the second half of the weekend recap. Heath, we got In Soccer We Trust, a busy week ahead. Do you want to tell us what's on the cards for tomorrow?
Yeah, so we've got Hugo Perez, the former U.S. men's national team. I would put him in the category of legend with the amount of caps that he had and the contributions to the national team. But current, you know, kind of has been part of El Salvador's run through World Cup qualifying. And it's just going to be able to bring a very valuable perspective of somebody who's been on the inside with U.S. soccer, been on the inside as a player and then part of the staff. And then also is now from the outside looking in and going through qualifying, having played against the U.S., having played against Canada, having played against Mexico. We're going to find out where he sees everybody in from a less biased perspective, which we're all full of. So he'll be on for Monday. And then obviously we go live every Monday, Thursday, and Friday. And if you're just listening to this on audio, obviously 1 p.m. Eastern time on Mondays and Fridays. Thursdays we go at 3 p.m. Eastern time. So we're going to keep this USMNT conversation going week in and week out. So you can find us over there on In Soccer We Trust.
Awesome. Yeah. Anyone listening in or watching, please make sure to like, subscribe In Soccer We Trust. And of course, Keigo Lazo. And if you haven't hit that like and subscribe button yet, please do so. Let's turn our attention to the Premier League. Had a couple of games this morning. West Ham United drawing level with Burnley. Big week for Burnley. Sean Dyche getting the boot a bit unceremoniously came as a surprise to a lot of people. Obviously, they're involved in a relegation scrap. But it seemed like a strange move given his the identity of the club and his stewardship of it up until that point. I don't think fans or players were particularly pleased with the decision. Just very quickly, your thoughts on getting rid of him.
Yeah, this one's hard just because I feel like when these things happen, I tend to think that there was a conversation between the board and a few players or the, you know, whoever it is that's organizing and a few players saying, is he the guy? Is he the guy that you think can keep us up? Otherwise, I just don't see how a board goes away and goes, you know, what would be a good time to let go of our coach right now. You know, in the midst of a relegation scrap that's going to come down probably to the final day, that you're going to need a few big results along the way. It just feels a little bit too convenient to me that for it to be like blindsided to the team and the staff, unless somebody's in there just trying to sabotage something, which would be a horrible thing. And I don't see how that would be good for anybody. So yeah, really surprising. And obviously to go and get a 1-1 draw, I don't know if that, I mean, it's better than zero, I guess, in the situation that they're in now, considering that they're still 3 points off of Everton. And, you know, you're looking at Leeds who are unbeaten in 4, 3 of those are wins, you know, Aston Villa on a little bit of a free fall at the moment, but still too many points to really have to worry. And then Newcastle, Crystal Palace, all of them just sort of sitting up further that you're looking at Watford, Burnley or Everton, being that third position that goes down.
I mean, I'd be slightly worried about Leeds United. Honestly, just the run of games they have around the corner, it's pretty difficult. But yeah, my thoughts on the whole Burnley decision, maybe they're just taking a leaf out of Watford's book where you just chop and change managers.
Do you think that's setting up for the future of saying, hey, this, we've got a manager in mind and therefore we're going to bring them in because they'll be great for the championship, but they'll also be great for like a little bit more of like, well, if we stayed up, we'd be stuck with this manager again. Like then he's a hero and it's a more complicated situation. Seems like a horrible time to do any of that, but I at least like posing the question of like,
maybe that's
why.
Their fear is that he does keep them up and then they're stuck with the Sean Dyche brand of football for another season, at least, been a long time,
but it's just, there's no good time to do that. Right. Or they feel like the contributions that he has, or they feel like this team is either going to go up or stay down despite like whether he had something to do with it or not. And they felt like he didn't have enough to do with it and therefore like make the change. I don't know. It's a horrible timing. So not that there's ever good timing in the situation that they're in.
Well, they had their goalkeeper, Nick Pope, appropriate for Easter Sunday. He pretty much kept them in the game. They took a 1-0 lead. They lost Ashley Westwood to a really stomach-churning injury in the first half. But Maxwell Cornet missed a penalty. And then Suchek leveled things, and Nick Pope pulled out some incredible saves. One in particular, there was a Diop header. I don't know how he managed to keep it out, but he did. 1-1 to them. And then Newcastle United at the death, Bruno Guimaraes, winning it, turning it around against Leicester City. And like you said, I think Newcastle United are home and dry. Yeah. They can count their money and look at the war chest for next season.
Exactly. I mean, that's the building block, right? You bring in Bruno Guimaraes and you don't know what's going to happen or how long it's going to take to pan out. And you have a little bit of a swing. I think they spent like 40 million on him or something. And it was a quick move from Lyon, who spent 20 on him. And it was just like a quick flip of 20 to 40. And you go, well, how much is this going to help? And it's the exact types of pieces that, and you go back to the Chelsea era, beginning of Chelsea era, the beginning of Man City era. And there's going to be a few pieces that you have to really put in place that are going to attract the bigger money to go out and spend it. Right. So people don't look at it and go like, well, you know, if I'm whoever, that's a big name, why would I go there? There's no foundation built around. It's going to be a few of us stars trying to survive and we're going to finish mid table. So those are the types of signings that you have to get right. And well done by Newcastle to have him come in at this point and have the contributions that he's had. because it's setting them up. They're now safe, which is worth $100 million plus, I guess. And now they can start to focus on, okay, now that we're out of the danger for the most part, we can focus on recruiting and building, you know, a super club, which is what they want to see.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a very interesting summer to come. We'll be talking to Fabrizio Romano a lot between now and the end of the transfer window. So it's going to be very intriguing indeed. As he calls it, it's the summer of strikers. But I think Newcastle will be bolstering along different lines, not just up front. Let's talk about the top four race. It was a bit of a banana skin weekend for London clubs. We mentioned West Ham. They drew to Burnley at home. That was a bit unexpected. But really, it's the North London clubs we have to focus on here. I'm afraid Heath, your beloved Arsenal, and Tottenham, both losing and opening the door wide open for Manchester United to crawl back into the top four race.
Yeah, I'm looking at the table right now and I'm shocked. So for anybody that's listening to this and on audio, I from a form guide standpoint, Arsenal have lost three in a row and they've lost four of five, right? And they're the ones that at one point I think had four games in hand, a potential 12 points to be able to jump that would have put them within 2 points of Chelsea, way up at within third place. Chelsea have obviously gone on a decent run of form in the league as well, but they would have been on points. They would have been within two, which say that would have put them at 60. They'd have been a decent spot, but now they're sitting at 54 points in sixth place. In like arm's reach from West Ham in seventh on 52, Wolves in eight on 49. Now maybe you start to get into some bigger gaps there, but you know your top eight, they haven't escaped from that, let alone trying to break into the top four. Spurs falling as well this weekend, and Man United again, despite their attempts to literally not do anything this year, have now found themselves in fifth. And some momentum and a fight for a top four finish, which is what that club needs if they want to have any chance of being able to justify whatever insane things they're going to do in the offseason.
Yeah, it's really remarkable that they almost threw things away against Norwich City. Norwich City, who have been very, very poor all season. Almost threw away, and thanks to this man on screen, Cristiano Ronaldo, with a lot of 30s in that tweet I'm sharing now, bags a hat-trick and gets them over the line. It's just still not convincing by Man United, but they do have like a pretty, well, compared, like all those teams vying for that fourth spot have a difficult enough run in. Manchester United on Tuesday play Liverpool away, then it's Arsenal away, then Brentford at home, Brighton away, Chelsea at home, and Crystal Palace to round things off. Really hard to know what's going to happen in those games. They have this ability, at least under Solskjaer, to turn things on against big teams, and they have a few of them to come. So you wouldn't really know what might happen. Just speaking about your Arsenal, though, and that horrible run of form, they're just not scoring goals. So we have Lacazette. It's been no secret that he isn't much. He's not as prolific, say, as other number nines. Martinelli's been very good, not exactly a striker. He's had good runs of form, but can't be relied on to bag multiple goals. So begs the question, was getting rid of Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang a bit of a mistake? If they do fail to get into fourth, will this be viewed as a bit of a weak spot in terms of Mikel Arteta's man management? Could he have perhaps repaired the damage that was caused?
Yeah. I mean, looking at it now, obviously he's gone on to Barcelona and done quite well and fit in seamlessly at Barcelona. And so when you look at a player like that and you think about, I mean, this one's so hard for me just because of the fact that like, Aubameyang was not in great form. Aubameyang was clearly a poor influence on the locker room in terms of leadership of younger players and things like that. He is a little bit of a one-man band in terms of being the star, which is really hard. Like if you were to take away the last three, four weeks, which is a lifetime, I guess, in a Premier League season, that's like, you know, whatever, a pretty high percentage.
Yeah, how many games you squeeze in 4 weeks?
Yeah, it's say the last five games. you take that away, they were an incredible run of form. The team was amazing. We were talking about post-Aubameyang era. This is amazing because it's more of a unit. It's more like it's centered around young players that are rising to the challenges that they have. And then you hit this dip of form and you start to go, oh yeah, you know, maybe we should have just benched Aubameyang for a while. And then when we hit this dip of form, you go, yeah, let's throw him back in. For context, I was thrown out of my club in the Bundesliga at one point. And a month later, they were like, and they threw it into the paper. They're like, he's done. He's not going to play here anymore. Like, there was like this sabotage attempt against me. And then like a month later, and I did nothing. Like, and then a month later, they were like, oh, his attitude is the team was in a bad run of form. I was playing out of my mind in training, and they needed me. And they knew they needed me. And I was in it. I was playing as a left or right midfielder then, as a winger. And all of a sudden, back in the newspaper, oh, his attitude's completely changed. You know, he's such a good guy now. And like, he's really shown putting the team first and all this nonsense. And I was like, no, I just kept on going about my business. And I got the opportunity again. They were the idiots that put the piece out, like kind of the hit piece against me.
The hit piece.
Yeah. And it was in Build, and it was in like a region that like it was the gospel then. This was like, you know, pre social media era. Thank goodness, because I don't know what I would have said if I could have.
Yeah,
it wasn't pre, but it was pre athletes having a voice on those platforms. It was only bad that would come of it. But then, yeah, after a while, it wasn't like I left town and packed my bags and went somebody else. I think you could have done that instead of giving him away for free. I mean, what was the worst that was going to happen? You don't want to pay his wages. I get that. But 6 more months into the season, you hit this dip of form. You know, it's kind of that rainy day fund of being able to throw him in and see what could happen. That's in retrospect, because you didn't know. That's me talking from the outside in, not knowing the attitude that he had. Would he come to training every day and train hard? Would he still be a good influence? You never know, because those could be pretty poisonous as well. That could cost you results at other points. So, you know, like for like, it's probably the best thing that he left. But certainly at a time when they're not scoring, you go, man, you know, you gave away somebody for free that you should have kept. And then maybe said, hey, you get one last shot. This is the last one you get, and see what happens.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'm not trying to play too much devil's advocate or stir the pot for Arsenal fans. I think in the time when they did get rid of him, I thought it was the correct decision to make. And they did have a good run of form and were very cohesive, at least for the few weeks that followed. So, yeah, we'll see what happens there towards now and the end of the season. So let's we'll keep things trucking along, move across the channel to Paris, where we just witnessed Le Classique. PSG just edging a 2-1. Marseille weren't allowed to have any traveling fans at the game. Just the way things are in France with rival fan groups, and particularly those two. And there's no love lost there. They have not had away fans at Le Classique since February 2018, which is pretty amazing.
Those fans like to fight, and they like to throw fireworks that explode at each other. And there's been some serious violence, but yeah, I get it. But it always hurts the atmosphere, because, you know, away fans are an important part of building atmosphere in stadiums.
For sure. So yeah, not that it makes any difference to the title race. PSG are well ahead. I think it's 15 points now, maybe even more. So yeah, Marseille played quite well. First half was pretty dogged. They kept in it, played a very high line, and, you know, gave PSG some headaches, particularly on set pieces. But yeah, it's just a bit too easy there for the likes of Neymar and Kylian Mbappe.
Yeah, I mean, when you have those players, you're always in games. But the upside for Marseille is, you know, they're coming off of an eight game winning streak, right? That's pretty much put them on pace to hopefully finish in a Champions League spot, and that's only happened to them, you know, I guess once in the last looking here, actually, I could just look right here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, like 8 seasons they've made the Champions League once, and Europa League the rest of that. And that's going back to the 2012-13 season, they finished second. 19-20 season, they finished second. So for them, you know, okay, you lose to PSG. Now you've got some more work to do to finish second. But to go on that run of form that they've had, I think is a sign of good things to come for them. And the fact that they're, what does that say, 59 points now.
59. So
they're still in the thick of it with Rennes and Nice. But like, but overall, you know, with, I guess, that's 6 games left in the season, or 7 games.
Six.
Six.
Yeah.
Yeah, so six games left in the season, and no one's going to catch PSG. But the fact that they're there and they're within kind of reaching distance of a Champions League, and the fact that they were putting up a little bit of a fight with PSG, I think is a good sign. Just because, yeah, they've struck. When you think about Marseille,
let's not forget they've got European title hopes this season to concern themselves with the Conference League semifinals.
That's right.
So, you know, in the face of PSG, who have, you know, really failed in their European ambitions, they did reach the final of Champions League 2 years ago. Marseille have, you know, they're two games away from reaching another final after Europa League, their Europa League adventure of 2018. So I think that would be a moral boost if they finish the season with the European title, at least, even if they don't the PSG in the league.
I know that sort of seems like Leicester City's plan too, is like what can you do in the Conference League to get yourself a European spot if you're falling out. So at least for Marseille, they've got two ways in which they can get into Europe, which could have obviously implications for other teams in the league if they secure the top one into a Champions League spot.
For sure. Anyway, we're getting to the end of the show. Oh, just before, just because I want to give balance to our goalkeeper coverage, Gianluigi Donnarumma, he was culpable for a terrible mistake for the Marseille goal. So it's not just Zach Stefan who's guilty of these little lapses.
Jimmy Conrad put out a really cool compilation video of just major gaffes, which I thought was I don't know if he made that compilation or not, but
I saw the one. Anyone listening in, check out Jimmy's Twitter.
Yeah, but it was really cool. It's kind of been picked up by a bunch of different kind of US based outlets, kind of supporting Zach Steffen, just to show that like some of the biggest goalkeepers in the world at big moments, including like, you know, Euro quarterfinals, things like that with who was it? Casillas or something like that had made a big mistake.
Unai Simone in the last Euros. You had Peter Schmeichel of Paramount Plus team. So all goalkeepers were in his remit there. So very nice of Jimmy to do that. I hope he makes a similar combination whenever I make a mistake.
I wish somebody would have just been like every time that a guy beat me for a goal during my career, somebody put out a like, you know, when like Boateng got his legs locked up by Messi, you know, and then people made the things of him falling through the earth and all that, being like, it's okay, it happens to everybody. Cause then I would just feel just a little bit better if that could be, you know, sent to me every time that happened.
Yeah. Jimmy, if you're listening, put your editing skills to good use. Me and Heath could do it with the boost. Anyway, final thoughts. There were other things going on, of course, in Europe and beyond. Just taking it over to MLS very quickly, there's reports that San Jose Earthquakes and Matias Almeida are finally going to part ways after a very tumultuous relationship, at least this season is concerned.
For people that don't know, he was trying to basically leave at the end of last season, but he wanted him and his staff to get paid out. This is speculative, but from what I had heard, he was trying to get everybody paid out to go. They didn't want to pay him out, so he just stayed. And now it just seems like they're on this, like, you know, on the inside sabotaging things until they're like, you guys need to go. And it sounds like now they're parting ways. So he got, the end result was the same, but they've wasted a lot of time.
Certainly did. Yeah. And then elsewhere today, Tati Castellanos, who Luis Miguel Echegaray interviewed at the end of last season's Golden Boot. He scored four goals today as NYCFC absolutely demolished Real Salt Lake. But let's just take it back to Europe very quickly. There was an Old Firm derby earlier today at Celtic Park. This time it was Rangers who won on enemy soil, coming from behind to win 2-1 and book their place in the Scottish Cup final, which will be on May 21st. And we've got another Old Firm in the league coming up on CBS at the beginning of May. It looks like Celtic will probably get the league title, but Rangers are doing quite well in other competitions, and you know, it's whenever these teams meet, it doesn't matter what's up for grabs, it's all about the bragging rights.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you take the Old Firm history out of it, because I don't want to divide anybody with this whole thing, but Rangers and Celtic both being good is a great thing, right? Because there was a decade of it being completely lopsided, and now to see Rangers come back and be competitive, you know, especially with just the reputation Celtic not doing well in Europe, but doing well domestically. It just, it adds to the, to the, to the love for the league and gives you more reason to watch more and more matches from that league every single season, because those games are fun, man.
Yeah, yeah. And I think Celtic fans, you know, would have been reluctant to admit that a few years ago, but it definitely, you know, rising tide raises all boats, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they don't want to see Rangers getting anywhere near that Europa League title, but it's out of their hands now. But yeah, Serie A, obviously we can't ignore that. There was no games today, of course, because of Easter Sunday. Mm-hmm. Italy being a very Catholic country and respecting tradition. But there were two games on Friday with big implications for the Scudetto race, as both Milan teams eked out wins, Inter beating Spezia and Milan beating Genoa. And now there's huge pressure on Napoli to remain in the race tomorrow when they host Roma, a very informed Roma side, it has to be said. Jose Mourinho seems to be getting things to click there, particularly towards this business end of the season.
Sometimes you just got to go to Bodo Glimt in Norway just to... or to really dial it in and get your confidence back. I don't know if you remember.
They struggled against Bodo Glimt in their previous two encounters this season.
I know.
You know, not an easy game for them.
No, it's not an easy game, but I don't know if you heard his interview after that game when he was just sort of like, the better team won, you know? We did everything we had to do. And then I was like, oh man, he's going to go on this rant right now. And then he ended up being like, you know what? They did a great job. You know, they came out and it was a good fight for them, but we're just a better football club. We're Roma, you know? And I was like, okay, he tied that together really well, of not having to run away. And by the way, the other news that I know we wanted to mention was, Ten Hag losing in the cup final in Holland, to PSV Eindhoven. And in my mind, I'm just thinking they've got a 4-point cushion in the league over PSV. They don't play each other again, but if he were to lose the final and then lose that, and then the United fans who may not be paying attention to the news lately find out that this new manager is coming in and they go to research him only to find out that this guy, you know, fell short in the Champions League with the best team they've had in a long time.
He's a Manchester United manager now. You know, he's just trying to get
Failed with the best Ajax team that they've had in Champions League in terms of experience of being able to go late, like built the team for Champions League, loses in the cup final. And then if you were to fall short in the league, man, I don't know. They are going to go berserk. And I don't know how, that jump from Ajax anyway is always going to, for a Man United, the club their size, they're going to be some criticisms, but that you at least want something to finish on a positive note if that ends up happening.
Yeah, a bit of a bummer note for him. When you consider where Ajax were, and we've covered that ground extensively on KLAT, so where they were at the beginning of season, particularly Champions League group stage, you know, they're everyone's darlings, and it just seems like the wheels have come off.
And he's a fantastic manager also.
Oh, of course, yeah, undoubtedly. Eric Gutierrez was one of the goal scorers for PSG, so a little nod to the L3 midfielder. Yeah. So maybe he'll... Maybe he'll get himself into contention come Qatar time. We'll see.
Hey, I'm still a huge fan of all of our young players go through Holland. That should be like, we should sign an exclusive deal with Major League Soccer to send them through Holland. Like, why can't Ricardo Pepi be at one of those clubs? You know, one of the top four clubs in Holland would have been better than Augsburg. But like, yeah, sign an exclusive deal. All of our players under a certain age have to go through Holland. Just like Mexico, like their best ones have always been Salcedo when he was there. He played with Beasley in Champions League and things like that. It was... Yeah, I don't know. That was a little bit of a side note.
Yeah, Andres Guardado. Yeah, the pipeline has been prolific.
Yeah.
Anyway, Heath, that's all the ground we're going to cover today. I'm sure we've missed some things, but that's just how a two-man weekend recap goes. You know, you can't cover everything. So anything else to say before we call this a day?
No, just we're at that nearly insane part of the season where we're starting to see what all the teams are made of. And, you know, like I said, there's less and less points on the table, and people that had points in hand haven't taken advantage of most of those across the leagues. I'm not just talking about Arsenal blowing up the last month or so, but yeah, this is a fun episode to chat with you, Dez. It's good to have you on here, man. Tell LME he can extend his vacation for a little bit because, you know, we got a replacement, a permanent one.
Well, I don't know if we've gone that far yet. It was nice to switch things up a little bit, but I'm sure both myself, my nerves, and the listeners will welcome LMA back when he can join us from Spain. Thank you all for listening, whether you were watching on YouTube or listening on the podcast feed. Make sure to check out Kego Lazo. We've got lots and lots of content to come. We're beginning a fun, exciting new series tomorrow. So keep your ears to the ground for that. And then we'll have plenty more around the corner. Fabrizio Romano. We've got Liverpool, Manchester United, the Coppa Italia semi-final second legs next week. Another weekend preview. Lots more to come. In Soccer We Trust with Heath Pierce, Charlie Davis and Jimmy Conrad as well. Make sure you check that out on YouTube and your podcast feeds. And thank you for listening. We'll see you again next time. Bye-bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.